presentation that I am going to offer has been put together by myself along with Veronica Arriave, who's here in the front row, and hopefully I can have her up here for a couple of these slides, and Elizabeth Ziemba. The reason why the three of us put this together is because we all have been involved in the medical products donation field. And so a lot of what we have to offer is based upon our own empirical experience in this area. With the overarching comment about drug donations, and that's from someone at the WHO, Dr. Hogersile, who has said drug donations are not for amateurs. And the reason is, first and foremost, is that drugs are not benign entities. They have an effect upon people which can be therapeutic or diagnostic or prophylactic, but used incorrectly, they can be very serious in their effect. And so he takes the position from a safety perspective on drug donations. In 1999, a professor at Harvard University put together a study of drug donations from around the world and looked at a number of countries to see what was going on. And it was important to be done in 1999 because around 1996, the WHO guidelines on medical products donations were begun. They were finalized in 1999, and so there was an important moment to see whether there was some relevance between the guidelines and what was going on in the field. There's a lot of anecdotal evidence that drug donations started around the 40s or 50s with some donations from large U.S. pharmaceutical companies, but there's no actual recorded first medical products donation. But we are pretty sure that they've been going on for probably a couple of hundred years, going back to the missionaries that have been traveling around the world. Today, we're going to do a quick donation primer. We're going to talk about the perspective from the donor perspective. We're going to talk about the recipient's perspective, and we're also going to talk about that of the intermediary NGO, which is an NGO involved in the process but is not in the field and is not the donor itself, and then offer some findings and recommendations. Globally, I'd like to start with the global drug market, which is approximately $640 billion. That's pretty big. U.S. members of the Partnership for Quality Medical Donations donate annually about $4.3 billion. And the International Federation of Pharmaceutical Manufacturers Association, the international counterpart in a sense, reports that a little over $4 billion is also donated. And some of the members in PQMD are the same. So it's not as if this is an $8 billion total. So what does this mean? It means that donations are, in some sense, at a global level, a very small percentage of what people need at a public health level. But if you consider that in a developing country, some $150 million is the national drug budget for a whole country, when you're looking at $4.3 billion, a donation can actually be quite significant at a developing country level. And our question is, of course, whether or not donations from industry help meet public health objectives. And so we started out with that kind of overview just to give you a sense of what the numbers look like. So what are donations? Donations are in cash, often, or they are actual product. And companies donate actual product to end recipients directly, or they donate them through intermediary NGOs. They are done by generic companies all over the world, as well as branded pharmaceutical companies, also known as some of the research and development companies that we are very familiar with here in the United States. They donate for a variety of reasons. There are tax advantages for donations. They donate because it's part of their corporate social responsibility effort, part of their philanthropic effort. They donate because they want to not allow inventory to expire, because many countries have limitations on what they'll purchase in terms of the expiration date on a product. This is a way to manage inventory. It's a way to remove the necessity for the destruction of product. So there are a variety of reasons why companies donate. Many companies are also quite actively involved in specific on-the-ground programs. Now, at this point, what I'd like to do is have Vero come up and do the corporate donor perspective. We've divided the presentation into three parts, and that is first the donor's perspective, then I'm going to talk about the intermediate NGO perspective, and I'm going to do Elizabeth's part, so forgive me if I mess it up, and talk about the recipient's perspective in a humanitarian emergency situation. We thought that the easiest way to summarize a lot of this information was to do it from the perspective of a horizontal program, a vertical program, and an emergency situation, and then swing back and with some conclusions and recommendations.
I'm just going to go through a few slides here in terms of looking at it from a corporate perspective. Both Michelle and I have worked from the NGO perspective in terms of accepting medicines and medical supplies for the distribution and allocation of those medicines and medical supplies into the field or field programmatic programs from an NGO perspective. And I think we are summarizing some of our experience in working with PharmCos in particular, pharmaceutical companies, in terms of their donation practices. So I'm going to go through some basic types of donations and its relationship to corporate social responsibility. When we're looking at the corporate perspective, and we're trying to surmise this as best as we can, again, coming from an NGO perspective, is, you know, they're looking to actively consider their commitment in terms of a global citizenship, community partner, employee, and as an employer and an employee, in terms of stakeholders, and to confront and alleviate the social ills that afflict the global community. I think that those are pretty much stated objectives of most of the pharmaceutical companies in terms of their corporate social responsibility programs. And in terms of why corporations give, at least many of them are looking at, you know, optimizing their management of stock, supply chain management, increase of asset turnover. They're looking to reduce their inventory costs. At the end of each year, they pay a tax on an inventory that they actually have on hand. So donating the product is an alleviation of that tax that they would pay at the end of each year. It maximizes cancelized orders, surplus inventory, overruns, and relabeling of product. And that becomes an opportunity in some cases for NGOs to actually receive that product and actually distribute it in the developing world context. I think corporations look at this as an employee retention strategy. Product donations allow their employees and stakeholders and shareholders in particular to take pride in the positive role that their company is playing in terms of the world and global health commitment. There's also, I think, an institutional memory of keeping that employee in the company, because if they feel good about where they work, they're more likely to stay within the companies that they work. There's obviously a tax benefit. There's the 501c3 code that if a pharmaceutical company donates to a 501c3 organization, there is a tax incentive for doing so. And so they receive a tax benefit. It's either twice the standard cost of the product to manufacture or twice the standard cost times half the markup. That's the way that the IRS tax code reads. It preserves the environment. Obviously, donating helps them going greener, and it prevents them from having to destroy the product, which at a cost to the pharmaceutical company. So it reduces disposal costs and environmental concerns. Corporate social responsibility, obviously, it's a way to positively promote their activities and to obviously procure some PR and media advantages in terms of how they're procuring medicines and how they're donating medicines. And they, and as a disaster risk, it's also a way that they can mitigate disaster risk. So what they're looking at is saying, if we do pre-planning and we select the partners that we work with, NGOs, et cetera, we're able to better pre-position how we might donate cash and product. The types of GIK programs or gift in kind programs, produce to give, if you're familiar with that, that's actually manufacturing. Many companies manufacture for the sole purpose of giving. So if they're going to take an XYZ pill, they manufacture that product or overrun the line so that they can take the overrun specifically and targeted donation. Price adjustments, price reduce or cost at cost giving or at cost pricing. Disease-specific initiatives, it's sort of like what you think of when Rotary and polio eradication, they take on a cause in the case of Diflucan, or which is for HIV/AIDS, or Mectizan for onchocerias or river blindness. Donation of surplus inventory, their surplus inventory they donate in those instances. International domestic employee secondment programs, those are global health fellowships. They allow employees within the pharmaceutical company to actually volunteer their time and energy to work with an NGO for a year while they're completely covered as an employee of whatever company that they're working for. Those are becoming more and more increasingly popular. Corporate volunteering, matching gift programs, and employee fundraising events like Relay for Life, United Way, those typical events. Some disease-specific, I'll just give you some examples here. Diflucan, International Trachoma Initiative, Mectizan, Viramune, those are different companies that are specifically targeting disease interventions where they're donating, in many cases, much of this product in perpetuity until the illness is eradicated at no cost to many of the NGOs. Obviously, it has its challenges. Dating and restrictions, many times expiration dates represent a dilemma in terms of how these products are donated. WHO guidelines recommend the product be given and arrive in country at least 1 year's dating in terms of the product expiry date. So there's always a supply chain management issue in terms of receiving donated medicines and looking at how to manage product that might be close to the expiry. Obviously, no product can be donated if it is expired. And donor restrictions. There are restrictions in some countries. You know, if it's U.S. embargo, they don't want their product to go to Cuba or Iran or in certain cases. So there are donor restrictions in terms of how those products are donated. Competition and consolidation. More and more NGOs want product, and more manufacturers have decreased. I was looking at something recently where they're actually in the last, since 99, 69 pharmaceutical companies have now become 25. Sustainability, flexibility, appropriate drugs, drug-specific quality assurance, obviously looking at donations in terms of higher quality, making sure that those are constantly available.
Thank you, Vero. Vero speaks a lot faster than I do. Anyway, we're going to move now to the intermediate NGO, and this is a name that I've constructed for NGOs that are not actually providing field clinical activities. They're not implementers in the field, like a World Vision, for example. We're talking about organizations like AmeriCares and MAP International and IMA that predominantly serve as an intermediary between the donor and the field activity. In some ways, they serve as a funnel for donations because they solicit donations from a variety of donors and consolidate the product and ship it out to the end recipient. And this is a very important function. It's not to be dismissed as unimportant because otherwise the donor would have to do it, and it can create issues for a donor who has to move product in a different line of transport than would be appropriate for the target audience of a donation. So their main role is to serve as a solicitation organization. They warehouse, they provide logistical services, as well as sometimes they have specialty programs such as the Travel Pack program, which is a box of goods, primary care products that are taken by doctors, thank you, to developing countries who may go for a week or so, or emergency medical kits according to the WHO guidelines on emergency programs. Now, as I say, they have an important role in soliciting from multiple donors, but they do, in fact, serve the public health needs when they supply directly central medical stores or private hospitals, public hospitals, particularly when they are doing so consistent with the national health strategy. There are some studies underway that show that for some regions of the world, larger volume of donated product goes into certain markets. In those markets, they obviously supply a greater percentage of the local need. And to the extent, and this is the key point that I'd like you to take home this afternoon, and that is to the extent that the ultimate field implementer is serving the public health objectives of the country and the NGO intermediary is providing product to that particular NGO, then in fact that intermediary NGO has a role to play in serving the public health needs. And that is obviously the point at which we have divergence between whether or not they really do serve the public health interests or not. And since I've gotten my 5-minute warning, I'm going to just quickly move ahead. It is essential that there is a great deal more coordination done between the recipient NGO and the intermediary NGO, and then ultimately with the donor. If you think about many donors, they have 5, 10, 20 products, and of those, they donate some of them. That means that the products that a donor has don't necessarily match the burden of disease in the country. And so the NGO intermediary has to be a funnel. They may well have to apply some technical competence that they may or may not have. They often think that if they do good, they don't have to do well. And so a shortfall with some of these organizations is that they don't actually match up the needs with what is available in the marketplace. And to the extent that they can purchase product in order to make sure that there's an appropriate mix in a shipment of the right formulations, the right products, the right doses, and the right labeling and packaging and everything else that has to be correct. To the extent that they don't, they can mismatch the needs. And this is probably one of the largest single findings of the 1999 study, is that the match was not always the best. And that's really the direction for improvement. Now, recipients' point of view, we have all lived through some pretty dramatic emergencies in the last few years, and these have highlighted some of the issues with donations, most important of which is that the worst problem is that people literally empty out their medical supplies. They go to their medicine cabinet at home, and they put them in a box, and they ship them off to Indonesia or wherever else the disaster is occurring. And so there are samples from pharmaceutical companies, doctors' offices, people's homes, and in the belief that something is better than nothing, it's not really the case. It creates quite a few problems at the country level. By the way, this is not what happens with the industry practice of medical donations. It is not the case that just boxes of stuff arrive. Sometimes they arrive in that fashion to the intermediary NGO, but they don't arrive in the country that way, because there is some order placed onto what is shipped out. The recipient's point of view really highlights this, the issue of the WHO guidelines. And those guidelines talk about having the needs of the recipient be met, that they're matched, that the recipient can reject the product. When you have emergencies, this is not the case. There is work being done by the International Red Cross at this time on what's basically called disaster law. And that is a way of structuring what goes on at the ground level. And that particular work will highlight the WHO guidelines. The recipients, I'm out of time, so I'll just leave you with this slide. The recipient should be able to say no. There should be better planning. There should be better partnering with folks on the ground. We have put into the reference slide of this presentation the references, so you can pick up where the guidelines are, and you can pick up the rest of the presentation. I think the last point I want to bring up is, for the future, we would hope that there is a further study done in this, as well as a toolkit, because countries really lack the basic infrastructure, plans, processes, procedures, forms in which to manage drug donations and to match them up with the needs of the public health system. And since they are the ultimate no-sayers, they're the ones who ultimately can prevent a donation from coming in, it's important that they have some process by which they can do that. Thanks very much.